Hi, and welcome to the session on exploratory testing. I'm Anuttara Bharadwaj. I'm the lead program manager on the Visual Studio ALM team. My team is responsible for delivering the test tools and lab management tools as part of Visual Studio. So how many people here have used our test tools or lab management tools? Okay, about 30% of the crowd. How many people have ever seen Microsoft Test Manager? Okay, many more. Good. So we have some context here. Nice. So from today's session, if there's just one thing that you can take away, I would love for it to be that testers can have a dramatic impact on the success of a product by ensuring that customer value wins at each stage of the product life cycle. Right? So we will talk more about how testers can focus on customer value, how they can make it win at every stage, a little bit into the presentation. So let's take a peek at what's the agenda for today. So we will talk about how testers can actually focus on customer value. What does that even mean? How does that translate? And we'll talk about why care about exploratory testing. Why is it interesting to do exploratory testing, especially on agile teams? We will also look at some of the impediments to adopting exploratory testing. So we hear a lot about exploratory testing, but not a whole lot of teams have been able to adopt it and publish success stories or say that, hey, I scaled exploratory testing on a large product. So we'll look at some of the problems that surround it. And, of course, I will do a demo of exploratory testing using Visual Studio 11. That's going to be a shameless plug for my product. And you guys love Microsoft demos, right? Okay. So we will spend some time looking at the tools that we built. So let's start. Some context first. So I'll start with a picture that you guys have probably seen a whole lot over the past 2 days and several times before as well. Now this is intended to illustrate how an agile workflow really works, right? For the purposes of today's conversation, we will focus on the green pieces here, right? The part where the team gets to do product backlog grooming. So you go create a product backlog containing product backlog items that are units of customer value. What is it that you want to build? That's what the product backlog defines, right? And then the smaller circle represents sprint planning. So you've decided what you want to build, and now you're going to figure out what do I want to build in each iteration, right? So you're going to go do sprint planning and figure out in what chunks will I deliver customer value, based on the velocity of your team. And then we come to pretty much the meat of the product development, the large sprint cycle, which is where the real product development, testing, and shipping happens, as a result of which you ship an incremental piece of software, right? So at the end of every such cycle, you have a shippable increment. That's what defines a successful sprint. Now, how do testers really work in the cycle to make sure that they're delivering a product that's useful to customers, right? How do testers enable success of a product through that cycle? Now, what is that one fundamental thing that every piece of software should have? Anyone from the audience? Code? Okay. Anyone else?
Should work.
Should work. Okay. Sorry, I missed somebody here.
Business value.
Excellent. So what is it that customers want when you ship your software? They really want your software to help them do what they want to do, which is exactly what business value is. It should work, and it should really create business value. Now, customers don't care whether you wrote code or whether you wrote script or whatever to get there, right? Customers don't care that your architecture is cool. They don't care that you fixed 20,000 bugs. They don't care that you spent 4 years shipping it or 14 years or whatever. Now, at the end of the day, does the product really help me do what I want to do? That's what customer value is all about. Now, given that that's the only thing that matters, what is the role of a tester in ensuring that the customer value really shines through, right? So at every stage in the life cycle that we just saw, the tester really has to ask just one question, right? Where is the customer value? Is this piece of software really helping me do what it is that I set out to do before? So What's the role of a tester on any given team? The fundamental thing is that the tester needs to be an end user proxy, right? So the tester is really standing in the end user's shoes, making sure that at the end when the software ships, it is useful to the customer. Now, having that responsibility of being the end customer proxy, how is it that the tester can contribute in the smaller two bubbles of product backlog planning and sprint planning? So let's take an example of an e-commerce site, right? Let's say we are building a shopping site like Amazon, and the product backlog is probably going to contain a bunch of features, like let me buy a book, let me buy a DVD, let me go create a wish list, those kind of things. Now, when the product backlog planning is happening, the tester really needs to ask the question, hey, here's a product backlog item on my backlog. Is this delivering customer value? If I were the user, would I use it? For instance, if the PBI is, let's say, create a wish list, would you use it as a user? Yeah, sure. It sounds pretty interesting. I would go create a wish list so that my friends can buy me whatever I want instead of giving me random gifts. I'd probably store what I want to buy the next time around. So, yes. So, it passes your test of is it appropriate customer value. So, that's fine. Now, what happens when you get to sprint planning beyond the first bubble? The question you really need to ask is this the best customer value that I can deliver, right? Now, based on customer feedback that you hear, the good part about agile development is that you keep putting out working software so often that you engage with the customers a lot more, right? So you hear from them about, hey, this is working for me, this is not working for me, why don't you go try some other thing in the product that'll be more helpful. So the tester really needs to factor in all this feedback. And during sprint planning, the right question to ask is this the best customer value we can deliver? So going back to the e-commerce side example, creating a wish list, interesting. But hey, there's another backlog item that says, go look through your previous purchases and track orders. Now compare the two things, right? What is giving more customer value? If you were the user, would you have preferred a feature that gave you wish lists? Or would you have preferred tracking your previous orders so that you know when a particular item is going to be delivered to you? Right? So the answer should really be from a user's perspective. So the tester has a critical role to play in figuring out where the product backlog needs to balance. Right? So when we groom the product backlog through the cycle, it's really the product owner that keeps bubbling this up and down. But the tester has a very important role in going and identifying, is it the right prioritization? Is it really the best customer value that we can deliver? So that takes care of the smaller bubbles, the product planning and the sprint planning. What do we do about the majority of software development? That's where all the action is. That's where we are building all the software. That's where we're writing code. So what's the best style of testing to employ there? Now, I'm making a case saying exploratory testing is probably the best style of testing you can adopt in that part of the life cycle to make sure that the shippable increment you produce is delivering optimal customer value. Now, what is exploratory testing? Somebody wants to give a shot in the audience? I have a t-shirt to give away. Okay, someone else? I'm sorry? It's like playing 20 questions. Interesting? No formal test cases. Interesting? Yes? Okay. Unscripted testing, so you're trying out different test cases that might just break the software. Very interesting definitions, all of them. So exploratory testing can be very nicely defined as simultaneous test case design and execution. So in simpler words, it's really a style of testing, which is a very freestyle, which is very free format, where unlike traditional methods where you spend a bunch of time upfront creating test plans, test strategies, and reams of documentation based on spec, you instead launch on the working software from an angle of, is this software really adding value? Right? Is the tool doing what it's supposed to do? Right? So with exploratory testing, you don't really have a formal test plan up front. But you really go out there and test the product, try to break it, and see if it's really helping you do what it's supposed to do. So why is it that exploratory testing is interesting to do in that part of the product cycle? Why not traditional testing? So it has certain characteristics that makes it more suitable for use where you're really focused on customer value. The first and the most important thing is that it's really centered on customer value rather than spec compliance. So what it's trying to determine is this product really doing what it's supposed to do? Did it feel as valuable to me when we started out building that particular product backlog item? So it's not focused on, hey, somebody gave me a 400-page spec, I'm going to match. Is it the right thing? Did it match the spec word by word? You know what? The spec might not have been correct. The spec might have evolved. The code might not be doing what the spec is saying. Right? So exploratory testing really gets to the crux of the problem and tries to focus on customer value rather than figuring out if the spec was written appropriately or not. Of course, it helps find bugs fast and early because now I don't have to go through the tedious process of writing a whole bunch of test documentation. And we all know how test plans end up, right? I mean, you write a whole big set of documentation with test plans and test specifications and stuff. And they eventually turn out to be dead artifacts. It has to keep pace with the way that software evolves, with the rate that your product evolves, and it's hard to do that. And the third and the most important thing, it tests working software, right? Working software is gold. I would rather spend 1 hour testing working software than spend 10 hours testing a spec, right? Your customers do not use the spec. Your customers will use working software that you ship. So bring the focus back to where it really belongs. So exploratory testing really helps testers focus on what matters. At the end of it, it's really the software that you produce that matters. It didn't matter whether you wrote a 20-page spec or not. So really it helps testers focus on the most important thing in any given product life cycle and frees them from the shackles of having to generate a bunch of these formal test documents that really don't keep pace with it. You must have heard a lot of talks yesterday about how requirements don't keep pace with the evolution of the product. Likewise, tests are even more downstream, so you see even more staleness creep into your test documentation as the product evolves more and more. Now, having made a case for why do exploratory testing over traditional test methods, why is it that we don't see a whole lot of teams come out and say, hey, I did exploratory testing of this really large product, and it worked fine for me, right? We don't hear a whole lot of people talk about, I scaled exploratory testing, and it worked beautifully for me on this product. Here's how I did it. So when we started building the Visual Studio exploratory testing tools, I was talking to customers about how exploratory testing helps them achieve their goals. And I heard a whole bunch of concerns around, you know what? Exploratory testing, yeah, we get it. It's nice. It's interesting to do. It gives me bugs fast, and I don't really have to go through a whole lot of test documentation. But I have ABC problems. Now, like any other team adopting Agile, our team that built the tool itself was on our path to adopting Agile. And my test manager said, hey, I want to adopt exploratory testing to test this really enterprise-scale product. I mean, we're working on teams of sizes of several hundreds. So how do I really scale this? When I think about exploratory testing, I realize the value, but here are a bunch of concerns I have. So based on all of the things that I heard from customers and my own test team, I sort of saw three buckets emerge around why exploratory testing is hard to do, or what are the common impediments that people hit. The first thing is what a gentleman here was saying. There's a perception that exploratory testing is just ad hoc random testing. You just keep going and banging the product, hoping that some bug turns up, right? It's so unscientific. Why would any tester say, I want to do exploratory testing? It just doesn't seem like it's a smart activity. Another thing that I heard mostly from the management types, the test leads and the test managers, is that there's no way to measure exploratory testing. How do I measure something when my tester comes and says, you know what, I did 2 hours of exploratory testing. I filed 3 bugs. I'm going home. Bye. Okay, so did the product get tested fully? What are next steps? The 3 bugs that you filed, are they adequate? Should we look for more bugs, or is it that the story testing is done? So there's no way to really ground progress and measure how or when testing is going to be complete. In the case of traditional methods, it's easy, right? You go say, I defined 10 test methods, I ran 5, 5 more remaining, 50% progress. It's easy to go out there and publish progress of testing. How do you do the same thing with exploratory testing? And last, and the most, and the problem that's described with the most colorful language that I've heard is from my developers that say, you know what, your testers, when they do exploratory testing, they do all kinds of funky things. I don't know how the heck to repro that bug. They keep doing random things and they barely remember what they did to get that app into that state. How am I supposed to reproduce this? The app got into that state when they did a bunch of other things while they were exploring the app. Now, how do I go figure out how the app got messed up? It works on my machine, so it's hard to repro. So when we thought about these problems, we realized that they're mostly perceptions, right? These are really myths surrounding the practice of exploratory testing that makes people more hesitant to adopt it. So we thought, when we are anyway going to do exploratory testing on our product, and we're also building tools that enable testers to do effective exploratory testing, we should really be thinking about how to get around these problems. So in the next half of the presentation, I'll spend some time looking through each of these myths, and I'll give you examples of what we did on our team to get over some of these problems. Now, it's not like the solutions I provide are going to be silver bullets or these are solutions to world hunger, but this is how we got around this problem, and I'd love to hear more experiences from you guys if you've tried exploratory testing and found some of these patterns emerging. So shall we get into the first one? So, what are you doing? Exploratory testing is monkey testing. You just keep banging on the keyboard and hope something happens. This is not interesting. Why would any self-respecting tester say that he's doing monkey testing? Now, testers tend to want to break software, right? That's why we hire them as testers. They have a knack for breaking software. So when a tester is doing exploratory testing, to the person that's looking on, it just seems like, hey, he's doing a set of random things, and he just got lucky. He hit a bug. Now, what's really happening in the tester's mind? As he learns more about the application, he's constructing a mental map. He's constructing mental strategies about, hey, here's the weak area of the application. Or, I know this dev sucks at exception handling. Let me go try that. Right? So he knows more about the application. He knows more data about how the software is being built. And he's creating these mental strategies in his mind. Now, it's interesting that the tester is able to produce fast results, but for the onlookers, it feels like it's a random activity. And if you have more than one tester on your team, how is it that these testers can communicate amongst each other and say that, hey, I'm going to try this strategy on exploratory testing. Why don't you go try another strategy so we avoid duplication, right? So how do you scale for a reasonably large and complex product? Now, the difficulty lies in these mental strategies need to be communicated without going through the tedium of defining test cases or defining reams and reams of test strategies. So how do we do that? So to find method in the madness, we came up with a concept of testing tours. When James Whittaker was with Microsoft, oh, he's with Google now, traitor. But when he was with Microsoft, we worked on a bunch of projects that were trying out exploratory testing, and we wanted to come up with a mechanism to communicate how exploratory testing can actually be strategized, right? So we have a concept of testing tours here. To explain it, I'll use a metaphor of, let's say you are a stranger visiting a city. Right? You're touring the city, you landed in this place, you haven't seen the place before. Now, how are you going to see that place? Right? Now, there are several ways you could do it. You could do a guidebook tour. You could maybe jump on a hop-on, hop-off bus and say, let me see all the highlights of the city. So you spend the day looking at all the tourist attractions, and in the day you're pretty much covering the entire city's main attractions. Or you could say, you know what, I'm going to do something off the usual thing. I'm going to do something off the beaten track, and I'll try looking at areas that are not so touristy. Right? I'm going to spend my time looking at back alleys. So that's my back alley tour. I'll spend time in areas that are not frequented by a whole lot of tourists. Either way is a good way to see a city. Now take that analogy and apply it to an application. Now a tester is given an application to test. He can do one of two things. He can either go and say, okay, there are a bunch of sales demos that the product's going to go highlight. This is what most users are going to use. These are my mainline scenarios. Now, why don't I go test that? Right? So the tester can go through a bunch of sales demos and mainline scenarios and test if the application's behaving well for all of those. Or he could say, let me use some of the more advanced features, some of the features that are meant only for administrators. Won't be used very often, but hey, it's still important to test. Now, when testers follow each of these tours, the guidebook tour or the back alley tour, it's very likely that they produce different kinds of bugs in different kinds of areas. So that's one way to communicate to each other that, hey, here's my strategy. This is what I'm going to go after this time. You could also think of tours in terms of things that are important to your application. For example, the supermodel tour. Now, the supermodel tour basically works on the principle that looks is everything. So you're just going to go take the application for a spin. You're going to focus only on the UI. Does it look and feel good? That's it, right? Now, you go through the entire application, you focus on finding UX bugs, and you're going to file all the UI issues that are there in the application. That's going to produce yet another class of bugs. You see, there's a little overlap between the different tours, but clearly there are different strategies. Now, it doesn't take too long to really come up with some of these tours that suit your application type and communicate between each other saying, hey, here's the tour that I'm running. So as an example, the Visual Studio Ultimate team is a great dog fooder of our exploratory testing tools, and the test team there came up with some testing tours for Visual Studio. So is everyone here familiar with Visual Studio? Okay, most of you. So sample tours, how we did it. We used the Microsoft Test Manager to store our tours, and we created tours that were interesting for the nature of Visual Studio. So there's a reflex tour. How are the application's reflexes? How responsive is it when I go hit Team Explorer, Server Explorer? Is it responding immediately or not? So that's one tour. Then there's the idiot tour. You keep hitting F1 and keep asking for instructions on every single dialog that pops up. This is supposed to test the F1 linkage between the dialogue and the help system, right? And then we have the palatial tour. Visual Studio has a great bunch of features designed for multi-monitor users. Now, you have a palatial workspace. You have three monitors. Now, can I use my tearaway windows? Is the experience looking good? Is it satisfactory? Is it making me more productive? That's what this tour evaluates. So you're getting the hang of it. There are really tours that are very relevant to the kind of application you're testing, that you can spot saying, hey, here are my weak areas and this is what I'm going to focus on. We know that Visual Studio had virtual memory problems in the version that we shipped before. So we created something called a footprint tour, which would measure virtual memory consumption for any given activity. So then my testers would run the footprint tour. It was their favorite, because we knew we had bugs in there, and it would yield like a ton of bugs. So there'd always be contesting saying, hey, I'll do the footprint tour. So it would yield like a ton of bugs that we fixed, which eventually made the product feel so much better. When you try the VS 11 beta, you will see that it feels a lot more snappier. It's a lot more performant. And then the budget tour. This was another example of tours that test experience on a low-end machine. Well, Visual Studio and a low-end machine is a little bit of an oxymoron, but for what it's worth, it was the lowest end that we claim that we support for. So effectively, these tours ended up being a fun way to communicate between testers as well as between testers and developers to let them know that here's what we're testing and here is the strategy that I'm going to apply and these are the kind of bugs that I will hit based on that. So tours were really very helpful to go vector your exploratory testing. So you apply a theme to this and it will help you scale for a product of larger size. You go do undirected exploratory testing, what happens is it will quickly break down and you can't scale for a product which has too many features. So here's a quick pop quiz. For the application that you're working on, think of a tour that's going to be interesting to do exploratory testing on. There's a t-shirt for this and I think Bob raised his hand. Yeah, so we use the test case work item for it, but you can customize your process template to have something like a tour work item.
Okay, so you use a test case matched to a tour.
Yeah, so the thing is we've used different kinds of work items, but the ideal thing to do would really be to customize your process template to have a tour work item. Okay. Because the test case is not really meant to be used as a tour.
Got
it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I would do a crowded tour that's basically a multi-user hired kind of lots of people doing it.
Okay, stress the application. Very nice. Crowded tour sounds like fun. Do you want to pass this to him, please? Thank you. Excellent. Yes.
You're saying no test cases can be created. But here's the thing. You know, when you have a bunch of queer folks who move from part to part, the knowledge is lost.
Yes. Yes, that's a good question. Hold on to that thought. I will be talking a little more about what's the minimum amount of documentation you really need to produce such that when testers move out and there's floating population, you really don't generate tribal knowledge and hope that new testers just pick it up. Okay, so I'm running a little short on time. Keith has asked me to wrap up a little earlier. So I'll be taking just a couple of questions. I'll be here all day, so you're free to contact me after that. And I hope to still have a 10-minute question slab at the end of this. So I'm just going to move on to the next section. Please hold on to your question. So the next myth that we talked about, there's no way to measure exploratory testing. What do we do? In the maze of software testing, how do I tell, here's where I am, and pinpoint that this is the progress that's remaining? Interesting. So right metrics are really like a fingerprint of your application, of your application as well as your team. So if I stand up here and tell you, here's a silver bullet, go measure this metric on your team and you're going to solve world hunger, I'd be lying. So metrics are really something that you need to go tailor. What your application's built for, what's your team culture, what's important on your team, what do you believe is the right indicator of quality metrics? Now, the metrics that we will talk about here is, there's an important distinction there. I'm distinguishing between the app quality metrics, the metrics that tell you what's the quality of your app, versus metrics that tell you, hey, here's how much exploratory testing is left to be done. Right? Now, both are relative. They're not absolute. Both are relative to the application that you're testing. So I'm just going to share some examples of what we measured and how that worked for us. So what we did was we measured code coverage across tours. So we used TFS for our backend and our data collectors work for code coverage. So we could use code coverage to collect coverage metrics across tours and we'd examine, hey, on this tour, we're seeing around 80% code coverage. Looks like I'm getting good coverage on that tour. I'm also getting good UI coverage. So looks like this tour is just about done. Let's move on to the next one. Right? Or we do code coverage on stories and see that, hey, I've run a bunch of tours on the story, but it looks like there's this code block that's not getting covered with any of these tours. Are we missing something? Is there a test hole out there that I need to fill? Session duration for tours. I've already spent 12 hours testing this user story, but it looks like the bug yield rate is fairly low given the complexity of the story. Is it that the dev suddenly became extremely competent and started producing high-quality code, or am I using the wrong tours? Right. So we would do these tour brainstorm sessions ever so often to make sure that we still have the right set of tours. And sometimes tours change per the phase, as per the phase of the product cycle you're in. So it may not make a whole lot of sense to apply something like a supermodel tour when you're just about beginning to build your UI. So it's also a function of where you are in the product cycle. Story complexity to bugs ratio. This is something that's interesting. Now, let's say you do user story pointing, and you figured that here's a story that's not as complex. And your testers are unleashed on that story, and it just keeps yielding bugs and more bugs. Something is wrong. Either there's an upstream problem, your developers are checking in crap, or your testers are finding bugs which are not so severe. So maybe it's not worth the return on investment to go spend more time testing the same story over and over. So these are some of the metrics that we use. Now, because we use TFS in the backend, it's easy for us to whip up these reports on the dashboard. So I can just go to like a one-stop shop and say, hey, here's how effective my exploratory testing is. These are next steps. Another interesting thing that we did was one of my testers on the Visual Studio Ultimate team built this custom heat map. Can you guys read what's written inside it? Sorry, it's not either, you know. So what the heat map does is it tracks how well tested a given area is, right? And it's classified per tour. For example, the first row tracks one particular scenario which had four interesting tours that they wanted to test on. Now, the VSU team got together and figured that the one metric that we'd like to track is the frequency of execution of these tours. For example, the reflex tour that we talked about in VSU, the responsiveness of the IDE was very important. And it was something that could have regressed based on all the churn that was going on in the product. So we figured that, hey, reflex tour has to be run once every week. Now, the palatial tour, not so fragile. Maybe I can run it once every sprint, once every 3 weeks or so. So I determine the frequency per tour and derive the color based on how often this has been tested. So one look at the map and you see the red boxes and you know that, hey, those tours have not been run as frequently as they ought to have been. You know that the green ones are well-tested areas. These tours have been run as often as they needed to be, and you're pretty much risk-free in that area. So now when testers really had to figure out where to invest in the next batch of exploratory testing, it's easy to go figure out from this heat map. Now, next pop quiz. So if you had to build a heat map like this for your team, you could wire different metrics to it. So if you look at the heat map, what we've wired is the frequency of execution of tours. You could wire some other metric to derive a color to indicate how well-tested a particular area is. So based on your application, what would be an interesting metric to go build the heat map on?
How many times the feature has been retested because of this?
Say that again, please.
How many times the feature has been retested because of
bug fixes? Okay, sure. So bug density in a feature area and how many times it's regressed. That's an interesting answer. Anybody else?
I have that issue, that's why.
You have that problem? Okay. Someone else raised his hand. Yes. Okay. That's an excellent example. So you assign colors based on the severity of the area. So you know that if their life's in danger, you probably need to be doing a lot more test coverage in that area. Great answers both. You guys need to come back and collect your t-shirts from me. I'll have a hard time passing this around. Great. So those were interesting metrics that you can build heat maps on. So in conclusion, you really need to think about metrics that are applicable to your own application versus think of one universal metric that you can go build a heat map on. So the last of the myths that we discussed, finding reproducible bugs. This is a complaint that we hear often that, hey, I can't reproduce the bugs that testers are filing because of lack of information. Now here's a quick puzzle. How many software testers does it take to change a light bulb?
8.
Sorry, somebody said that?
None.
None. Very good. So none. Testers don't fix bugs. They just find them. So testers will tell you the room is dark. They won't really go change the light bulb. Okay, so how many developers does it take to change a light bulb? It's a hardware problem. Okay. How many hardware developers does it take? Yes? What's the problem? Well, but my desk works fine. Works on my machine. So it's hard to go repro bugs that testers file, not just because of a structural problem, but also because of a motivational problem. Now, we'll focus just on the structural problem here. So if we just had to deconstruct testing, right? When testers go and do testing on any given application, they're really spending time in three different areas. First, they go set up the test environment. Set up, prepare test machines, go deploy the application that they want to build, and go create test data, all of that stuff. So that's the S component, which it takes to do setup. And then there's a T component, which is the actual testing time. You really went and tried to break the software, tried getting more... Tried seeing where bugs are to be found in the product. And then the last component is the B component. You spend some time filing bugs, right? When you hit a bug, you're going to spend some time writing how you arrived at the bug, collect some data, some custom logs maybe, or screenshots or videos of how that happened. Now, what is it that the tester really wants to do here? Out of these three components, what is it that the tester is adding most value by testing? Okay, so what the tester really wants is to cut the BS and add more T, right? So you really want to focus more time on doing actual testing. So here's where tools can help you cut the BS. So a use of appropriate tools can help you reduce the setup time required using methods like virtualization. We use our own lab management toolset to go use virtual machines to set up and run our tests, and bug filing time. So really, the bug filing activity is a distraction to the tester. He wants to go back to breaking the software. So how can tools help you reduce the bug filing time and yet make it efficient for developers to go fix these bugs? So what we did on our team was to go use our own exploratory testing tools to file rich bugs. Now, what's a rich bug? Basically, when the tester is testing the application, he finds a bug, and he pauses and says, create a bug. Now, at this point, imagine if the tester did not have to fill any data. The tool is tracking all the repro steps that the tester did to arrive at the bug. It automatically filled it in the bug. It let the tester take screenshots of whatever he wanted to attach in the bug. There's a desktop recording going on which creates a video of all the testing that you've done so far, and that's attached to the bug so the developer could potentially see exactly what you did to arrive at the bug. We also capture system information that shows, hey, what is the kind of machine that you tested on? What was the operating system? What was the browser installed, etc.? And if all else fails, we have something called an IntelliTrace log. So think of IntelliTrace as a DVR for developers. It practically records the entire session that the tester did in order to arrive at the bug and produces debug logs that the developer can then go step through and find where exactly the bug manifested. So it's almost as if the developer went back and sat with the tester while the bug was manifesting and attached a debugger to his application. So what if we could get all of these bugs, all of these data into the bug so that the tester, all he had to do was say, hey, I found a bug, wrote a title, got out of there. That's it. That's my bug filing activity. So to build our new toolset in VS11, we made this a goal that let's reduce the bug filing time to the maximum extent possible and create these rich bugs on the fly. Now, going back to the other question of, hey, rich bugs are great. What about my test cases? This is exploratory testing, remember? So I don't have any test cases, but I'd like to regress some of these test cases later. I want to create regression tests out of this. So it's not just the bugs, but we also generate test cases from here. So you can go and say that, hey, here's the exploratory testing that I'm doing. This sounds like an interesting regression test case. I'd like to be able to go test this later on. Or I found a bug, please create a test case for it. So just like how you can create a rich bug, you could also create a rich test case while doing exploratory testing so that your regression test suite gets created as a byproduct. So you're doing exploratory testing and you're not just filing bugs, you're also generating test cases out of it. So with that, we'll quickly jump to the demo to see how rich bugs work with VS 11. Can everyone see this? Okay, so this is the Microsoft Test Manager tool. This is, think of this as an ITE, like how Visual Studio is an integrated developer environment for developers, a one-stop shop for all their development needs. This is an ITE, an integrated test environment, where testers can go do all the regular test activities that they're involved with, test planning, test case execution, automated test run scheduling, reporting, analysis, all of that. So what I've done here is I have a test plan for an ongoing project, which is in Sprint 4. So the example I'm using here is the same that we talked about earlier. It's an e-commerce site. I'm using Amazon as an example. And you can see there are three stories that I've picked up to execute this sprint. As a user, I can buy a book, I can create a favorites list, and I can search for any item. Now, I have these three stories in here, and my developer says that, hey, you know what, I can search for any items been implemented, why don't you give it a spin? So now you see here there are no test cases in this suite yet because I haven't done any test planning. So I go to the test tab, and there's an activity here that says do exploratory testing. Now what this does is you can go and launch the exploratory testing tool without any context if you just want to go do some undirected exploratory testing, play with the product. But if you also want to scope your exploratory testing to a particular story, let's say, you can go and say, hey, here's the story that I want to play with. Now, all the bugs that I file and test cases that I create go associated with this user story. So I pick this user story, and I say explore work item. And what this does is it launches our exploratory testing toolset in the context of the story. So now all the artifacts I create will automatically be linked back to the story. So you see something that looks similar to our manual test runner for people that are familiar with the product show up, and it tells me that I can start testing on this. So I hit start, and the contents of the toolbar is basically the user story that I was testing. There are no test cases or test steps or any instructions here because we don't have anything yet. It shows me that I can go create a bug or a test case whenever I want. Now, what is the user story that I really wanted to play with? It says, as a user, I can search for any item. So you click on it, and it shows you what is the basic acceptance criteria that the product owner wants you to verify on the story. Search for a book, search for a movie, looks good. I could go open the entire user story. It shows me this whole work item form, any other details that I'd like to see. So let's start testing. So I launch the application under test. Excuse me. In this case, it's Amazon.com. Say, let's search for a book. So I'm going to search for a book on agile testing. And I expect to see a book by Lisa Crispin show up on top. And bingo, it's working fine. So I say, okay, let me go take a screenshot. This looks good. Now I want to create a test case out of this. Now there's no bug really, it's working as expected, but I'd like to have a test case from this scenario so that later on when I need to run regression tests, I can simply go run this one fundamental test case. So I say create a test case, and it opens up a test case work item form which has steps pre-populated. So if you can see, I'm not sure if that's very clear, if you can see the steps area, it says go to webpage amazon.com, type your search string in the search box, and hit enter. Now, all the tester really needs to do is go say search for book. Type a title. It also has a screenshot of what my expected result was. I expect to see this show up as the first result. So I can save and close the test case. And now this test case has been created in TFS and associated with this user story. So you see there's a hyperlink that says this test case has been created. Now, that was interesting. We created a regression test, but hey, I'm pretty sure that the developer that wrote this feature sucks. So there's got to be a bug in here. So what do? Let's go try some other testing. So I'm going to go search for Star Wars. It's showing the right result. Maybe he just got lucky. So let me try something else. So let's go, say, electronics. And let me search for the new Nokia Lumia, for which we have a pre-order available on Windows Phone. There's no Windows Phone showing up in the results. This sounds like a bug. So I'm going to take a screenshot and say, okay, not the right result. And I'm going to annotate it to say that, hey, here's what's wrong with your search result. So I could use Paint to do that. I'm going to say, wrong phone, showing Mego. And I also want to insult the developer, so I'm just going to say traitor. So I save the annotation, and I'm getting out of there, and you see that the annotated screenshot shows up in the notes section. So now I'm ready to go file this as a bug, so I just go say create a bug. What happens? It opens up a bug work item form, and you see there's a ton of steps put there. And the steps really started from the point where I created the test case. Now, it's not interesting to the developer that I tried searching for Star Wars and it worked. What's really interesting is that I tried searching for Nokia Lumia and it did not work. So I have a couple of options here. I could just go delete these steps, or I go and change steps, and it shows me a list of all the actions that I've performed throughout this session. So you're free to go select whatever steps it is that you want to go put in here. So I'd like to select just the last three. I say, give me just the last three actions and the screenshot that I took. And what it does is it snips the entire data collection to that window. So what you're really interested in is what happened in the duration of the last three actions. So you chose the last three actions, and it automatically detects those actions, and it says what you exactly did on the application. There's also system information that gets captured. What was the kind of system that you were testing on? What browser were you testing on? What software was installed out here? And now I'm going to go enter a title and say, wrong results for phone search. Oh, sure. If you wanted to add the go to Amazon step, you could have just added that step there. Right. So you can also save and create that test case. So you have a bug. Now you want to regress the bug. When the bug gets fixed, you also want to run a test that makes sure that this bug really got fixed. So along with saving a bug, you also have an option that says save and create test case. Now I choose that option, and the content that you selected in the bugs repro steps, they just automatically get transferred to the test case here. And I say test for searching the phone. So now I have both a bug and a test case that tests for the presence of that bug created at one shot. So you see it tells me that, hey, there's a bug 35 created and a test case 36 created. You click on the link and you get to see what the work item was. So now what happened was I spent a few minutes doing exploratory testing. I filed a bug. I also created two test cases in the process. So it feels like, hey, here's time that I've spent both doing test case design and test case execution. So now, let me just end this testing and go back to MTM to see what kind of results do we publish. So it takes... Yes? So we don't attach the automation strip to this directly. There's an automation feature available in MTM if you've used it. Right. Yes, that would be nice. You know, I'm the product owner on my team. It would be nice to build all my product backlog. But, yeah. So, the session results show the session that we just executed. It tells me how long I did exploratory testing on. It looks like I've spent about 3 minutes doing this testing. It shows me all the notes that I generated in this session. And then I have a list of the bugs and test cases that I filed. So if you open the bug, you see that the repro steps are available. And here's a diagnostic data adapter table that shows more information. So if the bug was the result of the app getting into a bad state, you really wanted to see what else the tester did to get into that state. So there's an action log file that shows you all the actions that have been performed in the session other than just the three things that are available in the repro step. So here's what was populated in the repro steps because that was the simplest repro. Now, if the developer is not able to reproduce the bug using just these three steps, he can go back and look at what else did the tester do to land the application in that state. So it has a complete record of all the happenings in the session. It also has the system information available that we looked at before, and it has a desktop recording of the entire session available. So you see, it starts from the point where I'm searching in the electronics division for the phone. So it shows you just that video clipping that you sliced the steps for. So it starts from where your repro steps begin. Oh. So here's a rich bug that the tester created with practically just enough to just go type the title out. Everything else was pre-populated for him. So when I go back to my test suite that's linked to the spec, I see that there have been automatically two test cases added to that test suite. So I look at this and I see that, hey, here's the test case that I created through my exploratory testing. So this constitutes the regression test suite that I generated based on this user story. So now with my exploratory testing, I'm able to create bugs and create test cases without having to go through the tedium of the whole test planning process. Any questions?
So Trader, is that a sign of affection for your
Well, the fact that Windows Phone 7 is not showing up on top of my website that I'm developing is never a good sign. So in conclusion, testing for customer value is paramount throughout the product lifecycle. Now, if there's just one thing that the tester needs to do, it's to focus on customer value and ensure it wins every time. We also saw some of the myths surrounding exploratory testing and how we worked around some of those problems on my team. So you can define and vector your exploratory testing such that it doesn't become an unbound problem. Testing tours is an interesting way to do that. There is also session-based test management and charters that you could go back and research if you're interested. You could also communicate your testing goals and easily track progress depending on what's important for your application. And you can test more frequently and faster and optimize your time such that your tester is really spending a whole lot more time doing testing rather than doing the BS of bug filing and setup time. So what are we waiting for? Go on and be a fearless explorer. Thank you very much. You guys have been a great audience. I can take questions for the next 5 minutes. Thank you.